carry?
Mr. Chairman, I handed out the bill to everybody this morning so they'd have a little bit more opportunity to look through it. And the changes that were gone over in the committee, page 1, line 14, is in there to make that sentence read right so that the plan has to be approved by the commissioner after development by the comprehensive, by the regional planning team. Page 3, line 15, that's the new section dealing with the preliminary loans that was a separate amendment that's been put in. And then on page 15, line 23, the repealer section was added back in as it was supposed to be. And then also the other request to the committee, the revised fiscal note from the Department of Commerce of $750,000. And
Mr. Chairman, I move we pass out the committee substitute for House Bill number 264.
We have a motion to pass out committee substitute for House Bill number 264. All in favor? So ordered.
Mr. Chairman, we're thinking about swearing in a new member from District 16, Nels Anderson, 1:30. I'd like to ask if we could recess the committee meeting and say if we call the chair for that purpose.
Yeah, I don't think we have to set a vote.
Yeah, they might take up the other bill. I don't know if you want to do it now or not.
No, right after swearing in. What time of event do you get?
I'm too loud to take this meeting at 15.
I'll be back in 15.
Sorry, we're going to have a quorum and then I'll call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, it's always a pleasure to come before your committee. Discuss resource-related issues. For the record, I'm Keith Becking, and I wish to make a presentation concerning House Joint Resolution 29. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As we're all probably aware, there have been several pieces of legislation introduced or being formulated at the national level that would preempt the right of the state to enforce its own liability laws. And this concern is a very strong concern in many areas of Alaska, and that we have, those of you who are here, year ago, I remember that we enacted, I think it was Senate Bill 406, which is a tanker legislation that provided a rather good liability and cleanup fund technique through the medium of insurance on tankers. And as one who is very much involved in the development of that legislation, I was very much concerned with the potential for preemption, and concern about the preemption clauses that were contained in federal legislation, and therefore the resolution. And fortunately, that concern was shared by my contemporary, Speaker Malone, and such we co-sponsored the legislation. I would like, Mr. Chairman, to suggest an amendment, and specifically on line 19, that whereas that relates to liabilities proposed in H.R. 776. There have been several additional measures proposed back in the Congress, and I would like to add language after H.R. 776 and similar legislation. In other words, I'd like to embrace those other measures that relate to the same subject and that might have the potential for preempting the state's right to maintain its liability posture. That's very general. I think the resolution fairly well speaks for itself, and I think a more technical presentation might be given by Mr. Eagle from the Department of Environmental Conservation.
Are there any questions with respect to the committee?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank
you. Can you state your name for the record, please?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, I'm Al Eagle, Director of Management Services for the Department of Environmental Conservation. In Commissioner Mueller's absence, who is in the East Coast now on this tanker issue, and the absence of the Deputy Commissioner, I guess I'm meant to appear here. I have been involved fairly extensively in establishing work plans and some management work as far as the implementation of 406, so I feel a little comfortable speaking to this resolution. I had very, very short notice of this hearing, and I'm probably not as prepared as I should be. I did bring with me a copy of a telegram that when Commissioner Mueller was at the Pacific Oil and Ports Group late in February, a hearing was going on in Washington, D.C., and I contacted him, and he sent a telegram to Don Young that speaks to this area of preemption. If you would like, I could read this into the record, and it would establish his view and verify that what I'm saying is consistent with what he thinks. Would you want me to do that?
There's no objection of the committee.
All right. This is this was sent again from the San Francisco area. It's the Honorable Don Young, U.S. House of Representatives, Washington, D.C. I understand that the subcommittee on the Coast Guard of the House Merchant Marine and Fisheries Committee is again considering legislation on comprehensive oil pollution liability and compensation, and that hearings will be held this week. Last year, H.R. 14862 was passed out of committee and has been reintroduced as H.R. 776. While we support the concept of this bill, we strongly object to the provisions in Section 110A preempting state jurisdiction over the field of liability or state development of funds to provide for cleanup and third-party damages. Further, we are of the opinion that any such legislation must serve not only as a source of readily available funds for recovery of damages, but must also provide an economic incentive to improve vessel construction and operation. H.R. 776 does not accomplish the latter. In the last few years, a number of states, including our own, have developed schemes to either provide for state-operated cleanup programs or third-party damage claims, or both. Most such programs are funded through per-barrel taxes, civil penalties, license fees, premiums, or a combination thereof. Alaska's program is unique in that it is designed to provide incentives for safer operations and funds only oil spill cleanup costs, rather than including third-party damages. We feel that this scheme is compatible with the development of a national program. As well, we are concerned that the federal program, through preemption of jurisdiction of state courts, would be unsympathetic to the peculiar needs of Alaskans, particularly those dependent upon ocean resources for their livelihood. State courts, which have traditionally handled liability, are more acquainted with both the field and local perspective and need. We will provide you and the subcommittee with more detailed information soon. Ernst Mueller, Commissioner, Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. I believe I speak for the commissioner and also for the administration in saying we do support the HJR 29. I'll try to answer any questions you might have concerning what we're doing in this area or this particular piece of legislation.
Is there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's see, we brought this up, I think, because somebody said there was some sort of urgency about this matter in terms of what was happening in Congress. I don't know whether Mr. Speck and Mr. Eagle would speak to this question, but...
There is a hearing, Paul O'Brien is working on this 406. I believe there's a hearing in Washington, D.C. this weekend, I believe, around today or Monday on this bill. And I know that because of, there was some discussion of sending Commissioner Mueller back from where he is now to Washington to testify on this weekend. I'm not sure who in the governor's office is going to present testimony there, but I'm sure somebody is. I heard no further on it. So I think this weekend there is a hearing on this bill at the national level.
Is there any other questions? Hearing none. Thank you.
You want a copy of this?
All right. Is there anybody else who's present?
Chairman, my name is John Williams. I'm a research analyst for the Legislative Affairs Agency, and I'm testifying today at the request of Representative Gardner. I'm kind of like the last speaker in that I've been looking at this area at the request of Representative Speckin for approximately the last 6 weeks. I think he probably wished I'd finish and get a product out with it. That's not the case. So I have a lot of background information that I may be able to answer some questions with, if you so desire. But to more specifically address the issue of the resolution, I'd like to talk about why the federal government is considering the preemption clause in their federal comprehensive liability legislation. There have been a number of funds, like the Alaska Fund, which have sprung up in the states, specifically Florida and Maine, and Alaska's the third. I think the concern is that there will be a lot of capital tied up in such funds around the country, and that if the federal comprehensive liability coverage is good with their $200 million fund that they're proposing, that this will not be necessary. Also, Florida, in their original oil pollution liability law, required a certificate of financial responsibility, just as we do with under the provisions of SB 406 last year, and the federal government does under various liability laws that they have. There are concerns that there will be complications about meeting the various financial responsibility requirements. It's pretty apparent that whatever federal legislation does pass, that the state of Alaska will at least lose that provision of SB 406. They will not be allowed to have the proof of financial responsibility, which means then that the level of liability is the corporation in the case of the business. You can't hold them for any more. Now, to specifically look at the advantages and disadvantages, or the various aspects with regard to how the preemption clause may affect states, I'd like to first list a couple of advantages. I've touched on these briefly so far. First of all, the preemption by the federal government of this area of law would prevent the creation of duplicative state and federal compensation funds, which I've talked about. And it would also avoid compliance complications such as the proof of financial responsibility that I've talked about. The disadvantages from a state perspective would be that a state fund may be easier to deal with and better and quicker in assessing fines and making sure the damages were paid. Secondly, state funds would assure immediate access of the state to money for cleanup operations. They have a fund on hand that they can initiate cleanup operations with immediately, without having to wait for the federal government. And thirdly, and most importantly, I think, is that it would seem from a state point of view that preemption should be preemption by atrophy of state law as opposed to specific legislation. If the federal legislation is good, then the state shouldn't have to ever use its liability legislation. But as previous legislation has shown, new legislation doesn't always cover the field like it was intended. Just as the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Act was supposed to take care of liability, there are obvious situations which it does not cover. And just as Senate Bill 406 of last year was supposed to be a comprehensive piece of legislation, there are obvious problems with it. And I'd also be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman? I'd like to promote, propose an amendment.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
On line 20, after H.R. 776, insert and similar legislation.
What amendment, Jim, or Mr. Malone?
And, do we have a motion pending, Mr. Chairman?
On this
amendment to keep one.
What do you wish to pass the bill off as amended, or committee substitute?
Just Mr. Malone?
Mr. Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent that report out committee substitute House Joint Resolution Number 29, incorporating the amendment proposed by Representative Bennett.
Okay, all in favor? Opposed? So carried.
What was 264?
What? The trouble is, I think they are unanimous. Not the company.
Is that individual recommendation?
264?
264?
Yeah.
I don't know what it was, if it was sort of collection.
Five recommended groups, one more.
So it wasn't dependent on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Give her Willis a letter.
If there's any more, the recording will be adjourned.
Good for us.
We got a quorum, we'll start our meeting, take House Joint Resolution Number 27. Representative Anderson, that's a try.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the bill in itself is self-explanatory, but I have a what I would consider an expert witness here, Mr. Ostrowski, who has placed in my hands something that I really haven't had an opportunity to review in depth regarding some changes on several of the lines that shows me that the bill has been re-examined and there have been some proposed changes. If you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, if you would allow Mr. Ostrowski to come to the head of the table and explain the bill and the changes, I think, probably make a little bit more sense. As I said, I had an opportunity to read the bill to see how, or the amendments, to see how the amendments affect the entire tone of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
My information, if you've got any questions, I've got all here. All interrelated, if you want any information.
Would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Hank Ostrowski, and from Natnik, and I would like to pass to the committee this revision, because as the resolution originally came down from Bristol Bay, the wording was very accurate, and it was the consensus of the group that they didn't want any changing of the wording. And this wording that I have amended into this bill, or into this resolution, is exactly as the people put it together, and that was done by George Gottschalk Jr., Frank Woods Jr., with the help of Mr. Nanilip, David Nanilip from Togia. With your permission, I would like to pass this, and also I think some of you have.
because there was a mistake in one of those whereases there. And clarify some of these.
See, presently there is no native representation on this council, and there should be because of the, as I show there, that there's a relationship directly to the Congress of the United States by these native villages in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution of the United States. And it's a bipartite relationship, and since the 200-mile fishery bill was to actually have testimony and representation for all elements that were going to be directly affected. There was a oversight on this management when they put the management council together, and since there was been no representation, the resolve says there that hold in abeyance all regulations and allocations of resources to any foreign nationals, and in a sense put a freeze on the allocation of these resources.
Forgive my total ignorance on this. What's the nature of the decisions that they've been making that is bad?
In fact, the allocations of these resources of the Tanner crab, for instance, to foreign nationals, mainly Japan, when it was shown by the Kodiak fishermen and processors that there was enough domestic production and processing facilities to adequately harvest and process this product. And the proof was at one of the final meetings, and very surreptitiously, about 10 minutes before the adjournment, it was brought up, and the Kodiak people wanted to change what they call the PMPs, which is the preliminary management plans. And they would have had to get the information in on that meeting in order to effectuate the change. And with fast gavels and fast boats, the people, the fishermen in Kodiak, were not allowed through Bart Eaton or get that information in. As a result, the Japanese ended up with a sizable portion of the Tanner crab in Bristol Bay. And that there were quite a bit of opposition to this from the fishermen in Kodiak, and through Tom Casey, I called him, and they're supporting this here resolution.
Who is Mr. Casey?
Tom Casey is manager for the Kodiak. Mr. Snyder here, the Kodiak Independent Fishing Organization there.
Isn't he also on the management council?
No, he is not. Bart Eaton is, and also Hank Eaton is on the podium.
If I may, from the chair, the people in the chain, Sandpoint and Kinko and Onalaska, they have about, well, it's close to 400 boats up here. Onalaska has a whole fleet of big boats. I think Nell's been up here and saw them. It's about 300. And they always fish the Bering Sea, so I don't see where, you know, where they could really give the Tanner crab fishing away. Our king crab season is so short now, and the price on Tanner crab is up to 30 cents a pound, and they gave the biggest part of it to Japan, so I support them.
Yeah, well, I'm not questioning at all. I'm just dealing from a position of ignorance. Is the management council, the North Pacific Management Council, what's the makeup on that?
It's represented, there's Oregon, Washington, Alaska, and I think California are have membership on that council.
Don't we have a majority, though?
The majority is not a majority, because it's very obvious that there's all kinds of little deals coming down through, and there's a lot of mistrust of the council. Even the scientific committee that is now assigned to the council, in which the council cannot act without its recommendations, is very... I called up Dr. Rogers yesterday, and the council is trying to put pressure on this scientific committee to rubber stamp a lot of these regulations. And the committee says that it does not have enough information, nor has it had time enough to analyze, to properly come up to the council with recommendations that would satisfy the socio, bio, and economic models that are necessary for the management of that resources within, say, the Alaska and the Bering Sea. And there seems to be some question as to who is really setting the policies of this council, because I've been doing considerable research, and we find the actions of a trilateral commission, which is a group of multinational corporations operating, that's North America, division, and they have a European division and a Japanese division. These are all comprised of multinational corporations. There are no fishing organizations, fishermen on it, you know, and the allocation of the resources have more or less been taken place. And this, by the way, has no political sanction. It's there as a group, and it has some pretty prestigious people on it. And there definitely have been a thwarting of the due process necessary for the citizen to have input into the legislation that's going to affect, and the regulations that's going to affect his livelihood. And the fishermen who testified were almost summarily dismissed. The fishermen were given only 10 minutes of testimony in front of this council, while the Japanese were given unlimited time, and some of their testimony went as high as an hour and a half. And there are quite a few mad people on this.
Who appoints this council?
The governor appoints the members from Alaska, and then there is, let's see, I think the Secretary of Interior, I'm not sure. I'm not that familiar with that bill, but I think the Secretary of Interior has a State Department's on it, the different organizations.
For the Alaskans, I take it we don't have confirmation. Is that right?
You have, Elmer Rasmussen is chairman. You got Clem Tillion on there. You've got Bart Eaton. You've got Hank Eaton. And then you got Jim Brooks, who represents the Fish and Game on that council. And that is the participation of Alaska on that council.
How about Chuck Meacham?
Oh, Chuck Meacham, by the way. Pardon me. Thank you, Mr. Lassen. There seems to be a lot of the information that came down that set up the coastal zone management, the 200-mile limit, and also the OCS was a result of a commission report here that was done in 1966. It was given to the Congress in 1969, January of 1969, and this is the report here. Which suggested the NOAA be organized in order to distribute this information to affected local governments, to affected fishermen, and to corporations. It took me 1974 when I became aware of the Stratton. This is Stratton Commission report, by the way, and there seems to be a breakdown, whether it's a de facto conspiracy or actual, to because we've looked, so we've been since, like I say, since 1974, it took, and this is from a private source that we got this from Rhode Island, and this here volume here called Our Nation in the Sea, this is what is generally pushed around. The covers are all off. You can see I've used it quite a bit, but Our Nation in the Sea. this was what the commission gave out, but it does not have the meat or the information that is in these three volumes here. And it took us since 1974 to get these. Now, there's another fisherman named John Durkin who became aware of this report back in 1972. And it just took us this time to get this. Now, we are fishermen who are very interested in things of this nature. And we should have stumbled onto it someplace, you know. But we find out that I can pass some of this to. Maybe I got some other here. Shows you the people who were on this report. You could pass these down. I think that it might help you. And it shows where the hearings were held and who were on the panels. And you find out that it was multinational corporations, foundations to multinational corporations, consultants to multinational corporations, university top-level C grant people, top-level bureaucrats in both the federal and the state governments. There was only two fishermen that were two fishing organizations that I could find who contributed into those reports. And that was Jake Dykstra's outfit of Point Judith Cannery and Harold Loken, I think it's the Trawlers Association. But this is the only fisherman input that I have seen into this report. And this information, along with the working papers, should have been distributed to the local governments that are now being impacted by, you know, coastal zone and. And if we would have had our foot in the door to have this information, say, back in 1972, we could have been waiting for the oil companies to come ashore rather than reacting, you know, like we're having to do now. So I think this, I would not only request that this resolution be passed, but that this committee take under consideration an investigation of why these informational sources broke down. Now, further information on this was that in 1972, the legislature enacted a law of the Sea Conference Commission, in which it was put up by the recommendation. I think Dave Hickok and Walt Parker were instrumental in getting that bill through. And what it called for was a mechanism by which information like this could have been distributed to the local areas. In fact, it even called for a hearing process by which information could be taken into the villages and into the urban areas that were going to be directly affected by this coastal zone management 200 mile and law of the sea. I've contacted all the boroughs that I've contacted have never seen this information. I've contacted all the native corporations through the aegis of AFN. They have never seen this. And Dr. Stratton, who was the commissioner or the chairman of this, was chairman of Ford Foundation. I found none of the Ford grantees in Alaska have ever seen this information. And you think just from a standpoint of pride of authorship, and since it was an issue that was going to directly affect the native villages, that the Ford Foundation would have used that as a mechanism to distribute this information. This was never done. That's an embarrassment for somebody. I don't know who.
I've got a question, or a number of them. I don't know where to start. Just get the email.
Yeah.
Number one, what is the makeup of the commission? Let's make one fact clear. The governor does not appoint the members of this commission. He makes a recommendation to the department, to the Secretary of Commerce, mm-hmm. who then in turn appoints these people.
Mm-hmm. Say that again.
The governor does not appoint the members of this management council. He recommends three names for each slot, and those in turn are turned over to our delegation of Congress or to the Commissioner of Commerce, Secretary of Commerce, who in turn appoints these people on recommendations of Gravel, Stevens, and Young. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, but I think by going in, the management council is structured in such a way that, for instance, a good example is Brooks. Now, he's representative of the state of Alaska. These slots mm-hmm. put aside for him. Meacham, recommendation of the governor's office. His slot is set aside. We have a man from NOAA on there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a lot of these things are predetermined before you even get down to actual selection. of a person to serve in this council. And I don't know what the nationality of Eaton is. I don't know if he's a native Alaskan or if he's a Swede or what.
He's not representing the native groups.
Well, I wish, what is it? Is Eaton, what is Bart Eaton?
He's part Russian.
Is, that, he's a, we, is he a, does he come under the native lands claims?
Yes.
Okay.
That's Hank Eaton.
Okay, well, then that disturbs me a little bit because, you know, evidently this, in line five, it says relating to native representation on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. It seems like we have that at the present time.
Mr. Chairman, could I respond? I talked to Mr. Eaton. He very definitely said that he was not a native representative on this council. He was appointed by the governor, and that he was not a representative of the natives. Nobody voted, another native group voted for him to be a representative to this council. Now this is, although he had the endorsement of the native groups, they did not, it was the governor who appointed him, so that means that he is not representative of that native group. This is very definitely, and he made a very definite statement to me that he had the endorsement, but he was not representing the native groups.
But be that as it may, he is a native and he's also on this board.
It's not a question of a...
Nobody, well, that's a, I'm just saying what's written here. That's all I'm referring to. You know, this isn't my idea. Another thing is that, you know, the governor, number one, he don't make his appointments. It could have been four other people. The Commerce makes these appointments. And I don't know of anybody, fishing groups, of course, that probably recommended Eaton. I don't know who did. I don't know who recommended Tillian. I don't know who recommended any of them. But they aren't based, the recommendations aren't based upon any particular race or creed or anything else. Recommendations are based primarily on those knowledgeable of the resource.
I would like to.
Rasmussen's position, I'm sure, is on this council is in direct relationship to the many years he's served on the International Commission, whatever he's been on for the last 10 years. I imagine that's why his slot is there. So what we're saying is that that's a slot that's predetermined. What I'm trying to do is get it down to how many, you know, choices do we really have as Alaskans?
There might be a constitutional error in the law itself, because under Article 1, Section 8, and I could pass this, or I could read it to you if you want, I happen to have a Constitution of the United States here. And on Article 1, Section 8, the Congress shall have power, now it says, to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribe. This is where you get your special relationship on a bipartite basis. Now, in the legislation, here are a group of people that have a special relationship to Congress that have not been represented on this 200-mile council. Now, Mr. Eaton is an individual. He does not represent without the specific deal of any of those tribes. If he did, then it would be a then he would represent the Indian, the native villages there. See, there's been a couple issues, I think, that are relating to this now. But right now, with the erosion of the control of the resources by the state of Alaska, the only vehicle that we have to recapture for the citizens of the state, as long as with the native, is this mechanism of holding this, bringing this all the way back to square one. Now, we're not contesting the 200-mile sovereignty that the United States has asserted. We feel that's a good, it's a very, very good that they have asserted, but to actually dilute that sovereignty and allocating those resources to a foreign nation, see, without a buyer leave of the people that are directly affected, and since those people have a direct relationship to Congress under Article 1, Section 8, we think that there's a big flaw someplace. And that Alaskans should recognize, I think the legislature should recognize it, and ask that these council, and by the way, see, they have trouble right within the council. That scientific committee itself has quite a bit of doubts as to how the council is being operated and the discriminatory practices that are being fostered in that council.
Well, it's not unusual for people involved in that type of, you know, commissions. Even in our own legislative process, we have problems among our own people. However, it seems to me that if we're going to ask that everything's been being held in advance, that until whatever problem we have here is resolved, if in fact it is a problem, and that the treaties that we sign now, which are allowing certain foreign nationals to fish within our 200-mile limit, and as I understand, there's at least a 15% reduction in what their quotas are this particular year over last year. The thing is functioning, and according to newspaper articles I've seen, it's people are rather amazed to see that it is working in such a quick, short period of time to implement it. The Russians are observing it. There's been, up to this point, only one possible violation of the 200-mile limit based upon the signatories of this particular act. Now, there's nothing saying that these people, if they, if, you know, we'd have one hell of a time if they decide they weren't going to observe it in a peaceful manner. We just flat couldn't keep them out. But we are. We're at least managing to hold back the impact on the fisheries at the present time, even though it's, you know, it's a very slim hold we have on them until this thing is structured. Certainly there's going to be problems among the group themselves. They're going to implement, they're going to give quotas to foreign nations, which I don't approve of, but I think on the overall picture, I think it's going to be beneficial to all Alaskans, whether they're native villages or whether it's a community of Anchorage or a city of Anchorage or the community of Sitka. It's going to be beneficial. The overall picture is going to benefit the state. It's going to protect the resource. But if we get into a cat and dog fight over constitutional rights of, I know, we're talking things that this committee can't resolve is whether this thing is structured constitutionally or not. We don't know that. But we're going to have to make some assumptions. We know one thing. We know it's working. We know two things, that no matter what we do, we're not going to stop at this present point. And I certainly would like to have somebody who is a member that we have two or three people here in Juneau who are a member of this council. I'd like to, you know, have testify in relationship to what has happened in these three or four meetings that have since they structured this creature. Unfortunately, Chuck Meacham now is in Japan. I'm sure Senator Killian would be more than willing to testify what has happened up to this point with the meetings they've had. I don't think we can arbitrarily say that, for instance, on line 24, there's strong evidence is emerging that the council is rubber stamping policies. How the hell do we know that?
Well, we have information on this trilateral commission, see, that was
set up. But I mean,
these
are things you're asking us to subscribe to.
I can submit all this information to you.
I don't think I want to go out and limb and say they're not doing a job, because I think they're making progress. Certainly it's not, we'd like to see all the foreigners out tomorrow, totally and completely, but you know, that's unrealistic. And I don't think if we, I really don't think if we put seven members on that board, or the total six members allocated to Alaska, if they all came from the native village of Bristol Bay, it's still not going to solve the problem you're looking at.
Mr. Chairman, may I respond? See, this 200-mile limit, there's tremendous flaws that are actually going to actually eliminate American nationals within a 200-mile limit. Like, one of the biggest flaws that all it required was the one of the principals within the corporations in a foreign corporation, and then they could fish the foreign boats within the 200-mile limit. Also, there's what they call the Hansen Act.
Please say that again.
Yes, that,
according to Senator Magnus and Senator Jackson from the state of Washington, who drafted this particular 200-mile
yes.
limit, that's not so.
There was an exception made, and according to the report by one of the committees, what I stated to you was exactly true. And furthermore, on the Hansen antitrust case, which is a British firm, is actually contesting the right of the state of Maryland to exclude other foreign nationals within the 3-mile territorial limit. This is now in the Supreme Court. I have the upon this decision, if this comes down adversely, this means that the 200-mile limit has no protection at all for any of the sovereignty of the resource for any of the individuals that are citizens of the United States. They have no more protection than any other foreign national. And if you follow through on some of this information within this, what I'm also contesting or trying to get is an investigation on the breakdown in the informational processes through NOAA and through actually this Law of the Sea Conference Commission, who was specifically
mandated by the legislature to take this information, to get it out into the affected communities, and not only that, to hold hearings on that. And
you're talking about the law, see, aren't you talking about the law of C conference that's been going on for the last 10 years?
No, law of C conference commission.
An agreement between all nations rather than a 200-mile limit?
I have a copy of the law here. And what it does, it actually sets up the mechanism for all the coastal zone and allows the legislature to pass legislation affecting coastal zone. And it was passed more or less to get so that Alaska could get a jump on the, let's see now, what is that? It's 9G, or it's, pardon me, here it is. This is the powers and duties of the commission. This had never been implemented either by either administration, the Egan or the Hammond administration. So, and
I know they've had a number of meetings. Senator Croft, I believe, was a member of it. They're active. I don't know what they're doing, but
yeah, but they haven't been actually implementing the sections for anybody's perusal. They wanted to read this. We can have made copies of it. And see, there seems to be a great, and as a result, the Alaska citizen, you have seen the erosion of the control of the Fish and Game Board to this council, now this Pacific Management Council. Now, it's very obvious that the allocations of those resources to the Japanese, when it was shown and proved by the people of Kodiak that we did have the processing and the production facilities, that this was in direct opposition to what the intent of the law was.
I don't know, Hank, I don't believe that.
And further, the scientific committee has refused to rubber stamp any of the council's decisions, and they are going very deliberatively, there was a last council meeting, there was a hell of a furor on there, Dr. Rogers, I know, was very upset in the fact that they were trying to force these scientific committee to make snap decisions on a volume of information that the scientific committee would not undermine its integrity by making a snap decision on. So all in all, I think that with this resolution, I think what will happen, if this is passed, it will, I would suggest to this committee or maybe a special committee of the House to hold an investigation and hearings in all the rural areas and also the urban areas to find out exactly why this informational process has broken down, and maybe to take some of this information that now is available out to the people. Because no corporation that I know have, no local government or has had this information. And this is the information they need to actually forestall the impact of these big multinational corporations coming in and grabbing our fisheries, as also our outer continental shelf resources.
Who are all these multinational corporations that are on this commission?
I'll show you the effect of who it is, if you will bear with me here. Let's see what I've got to put. Well, that's in this staff over here.
Here's the commission members.
Here's your trilateral commission here, which was specifically set up among the multinational corporations. And by the way, the Secretary of, I think, the Commerce is on this trilateral commission. Also, I think seven members of the cabinet, and they are very well represented. And they have no actually political backing. It's just a mechanism of the, and here's the list of the members of the board of directors of this trilateral commission, which is affecting the policies on this Pacific Management Council. We've done considerable research on this.
Who are they? I thought you said when you handed this out, there are all these multinational corporations.
Yes. I see. Now open that up. Open that up. You'll see the.
I opened it up.
Okay. Now do you see the hearing processes there?
I see the hearing process.
Okay. Do you see the people who testified and actually were members of the?
I see people who testified. They're not on the committee, are they?
Yes. The
correspondence and interviews.
Yes. And these
people
were the
testified.
These were people were contacted for testimony and to affect the policies.
persons appearing at panel hearings.
Yes, and you find out that that was very heavy as far as we've gone through that list pretty thoroughly.
It looks like mostly university people.
Mm, there's university, and then there's also, if you look
through... Same kind of people we use for consultants to the legislature.
Yes, C. Grant is funded a lot by Bard Foundation grants, and if, where's the... If I got a copy here.
Professor. Professor of the Institute.
All right, persons appearing at the panel. You've got scientist Chevron Research. That's multinational. We've got Bolt, Burnick, and Newman, Cambridge, Massachusetts. You've got, you can read them down faster than I can probably explain it, but you can see quite a few of these big corporations that dominated this.
What, these members?
No, the testimony into this, you see. You see where these hearings were held now, see, like Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Ford Foundation, Federal Water Pollution Control Administration, Chicago. These are places where fishermen do not hang out, or, you know, there's no way that they would have access into this commission to affect the policies which were set up in this document here, which was the basis for the 200-mile limit, the coastal zone management, and the Outer Continental Shelf that is now being impacted on the citizens of Alaska without actually having input into this information or the policies that were, the policies that would effectuate that legislation.
Very good.
This is why I think that the deal was ignored.
First, you know, we're involving coastal management, we're involving other things, and I don't know about all this material here, how it relates to the 200-mile or each public law, whatever it is, 200-mile limit law. Of course, I've read the 200-mile limit. I don't understand it all, certainly, but I understand the way it's structured. I understand that I'm aware of the input that's coming in from people who live along our coastline, who are involved in directly in the fisheries. I'm aware of the input that's put in by people who have been involved in other things but have been interested in fisheries for years. And I think, you know, it's structured reasonably well where I'm convinced that those majority member on the Management Council, North Pacific Management Council, are very capable of doing their best to keep the foreign fisheries out of the 200-mile limit. There's certain limitations that they have to comply by the law, which says that as long as resources being harvested within certain quotas, and we don't have the capabilities to do it ourselves, certainly the foreigners can continue to fish. And I would hope that maybe a year or two we could send a few boats out and shove a few of them off until eventually we'll have total control. And in relative relationship to the crab problem in the Bering Sea, and I was rather upset myself when I read the original news report about them granting a certain quota to the Japanese to harvest. Matter of fact, I took an issue of that to Senator Tilley when he came back from the meeting, and his explanation was entirely different than Mr. Ostrowski's here. That he in fact says there's really they aren't harvesting near the capabilities in this area of that particular species. That they have any other choice actually to comply. If they're going to comply with this public law, they're going to have to allow a quota in there. And you know, it seems to me that it's a decision made by these people who are, we hope, are representing the state of Alaska and those in the state of Washington, Oregon, and California who are members of this Management Council. I don't see any international conspiracy to rape the resources of Alaska. I think that it's something that's just getting started, and I think we should, you know, watch it and do what we can to help it instead of throwing load blocks in the front of it to disrupt it, and probably to the benefit of the foreign fisheries and to the negative impact to our country. I think that we're dealing in things here that I'm not, there's not, there isn't that much information here, Mr. Chairman. I think that we should have somebody here who was, like Mr. Tillian, who was a member of this management council, to tell us what's happening up there.
Mr. Ostrowski, I would like to have Clement Tillian on that commission.
I would like to make one more statement, and that this has the endorsement of the Bristol Bay Borough, was unanimously voted on last night, and there will be a telegram to that effect to this committee. And there will be telegrams coming down from the native villages affected and on this.
Were they given all the information here and told who's on the commission and how they're appointed and all that sort of stuff?
They have that information, and this resolution was not purposely put together. There is a definite feeling on the part of those who attended, some of these who attended the council meeting, and this reflects.
For what reason did the Bristol Bay Native Corporation endorse it? Why is it?
Not the corporation.
Or the borough?
Bristol Bay Borough. They endorsed. They just took this resolution and they unanimously endorsed it.
And they had all the backup material, or just because it sounds like the natives aren't there?
No, they've been working on this. The people in Bristol Bay have been researching it. They've been doing a lot of economic work on a lot of this for quite a while.
And they have all this information that's available to you, I swear?
Yes, well, this was made available to them, yes. But no, there's very few copies of this around, by the way. There's only two other copies that I know that are of this, and that one, Mr. Durkin and myself, that have, you know. And I've never found any other borough or any individuals who...
But they've seen this, the borough.
Oh, yeah.
Borough.
They. I
Which
showed...
is that there?
This is a Stratton Commission report.
Yeah, I have it on my...
Yeah, I know, I know.
Next room.
Yes. I think you received it in 1970, I think.
Yeah. From Julia Stratton.
Yes.
But I don't... It doesn't bear anything on this except it recommended the 200-mile limit.
That's all that does?
Really, it goes into a lot of detail about transportation. It's a very good report, but it doesn't have any bearing on this. This is long past that. It
sets up the policies on which the deal is. It's in this document right here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Starr.
Well, the resolution is kind of insulting. So I don't know why it should come that way. The Bristol Bay Native recommended Truman Emberg as their man, and he was appointed to the advisory committee. Of the five public members that aren't mandated by law by Congress, there's seven public members, two of which must come from the state of Washington, and they're ex-ambassador Donald McKernan and Harold Locken, president of the Halibut Vessel Owners. From here, we have five members that are picked from a list of 15 submitted to the secretary by the governor. And of those, you have Hank Eaton, vice president of Conog Incorporated, Bart Eaton of the Kodiak Fishermen's Association, myself, Chuck Meacham of the governor's office. Oh, I'm blind here.
Elmer Rasmus.
And Elmer Rasmussen, who is a commissioner of the International North Pacific Fisheries Commission. The first thing that some of the people don't realize in this area is the only area of salmon that the North Pacific Management Council is involved in are those salmon involved in our trawl fisheries here in southeastern Alaska, so far as they overlap with British Columbia and Washington, that the bulk of any fishery that's operated exclusively within the 3-mile limit remains under the exclusive jurisdiction of the state in which it takes place. And therefore, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the Board of Fish and Game handle all of those fisheries within 3 miles, except those that we preempt, none of which we've preempted. The council was caught in a catch-22 position when it took effect this March. It took effect actually in January as far as our appointments went, in that you had about 122 days of hearings and everything to come up to get your permanent management plans. The bill authorized the Secretary of Commerce to institute plans of his own in lieu of permanent management plans until such time as the council has turned out permanent management plans. At this time, the council has not turned out any permanent management plans, and the hearings, public hearings in several places in the state are required by law, and then a return to Congress, and then a return back to here. It's a lengthy process. What we did do was look over those plans submitted by the Secretary of Commerce, National Marine Fisheries, and we listed a whole segment like the snail fisheries in Japan and so forth that we didn't object to. We had other recommendations such as their herring plan that we did have objections to and recommended that no herring fishery take place, no gillnet herring fishery take place in the Norton Sound Bering Sea area, and that the quota on drag caught or trawl caught herring be reduced 50% from the secretary's. He doesn't have to. All those are is advisory, recommendations. That the secretary doesn't have to really get down to the nuts and bolts of paying attention to what we do till we come out with a permanent management plan, and there's no way to have one of those in place in less than a year, starting the first of this March. So you're not looking at any permanent management plans for this season. There's been a great deal of controversy on Tanner crab. The Kodiak people wanted us to just cease, tell the Japanese they could no longer fish Tanner crab. This happens to be in violation of the law that says you may only keep to United States nationals that portion of the catch that they can catch, and that you may adjust the optimum sustainable yield as separated from the maximum sustainable yield so that you can have the correct size crab or fish. But that after you've reduced this, for instance, I felt that in the Bering Sea on Baird Titanic crab, you would have, instead of a total allowable catch of 105, which is biologically correct, that's a million metric tons, or 1,000 metric tons, that it should be reduced to about 55. The council came to no decision on this whatsoever. It was a split over it. We still have to turn out permanent management plans, but at this time, it's impossible for the council to do anything but comment on the secretary's recommendations. The only ones that you might say that we rubber stamped were those that the Americans took no part of, such as the snail fishery and some of the plans on species that we didn't worry too much about. There's a great deal of controversy on black cod, but again, it'll be next year before the council can do anything on this. We're like the state board of fish and game, only outside of 3 miles. On the mandated members on this council are men like Harry Reitz, National Marine Fisheries, Jim Brooks, our director, our commissioner of fish and game, also the commissioner, fish and game commissioner of the state of Washington, and the fish and game commissioner of the state of Oregon. But it's, when you look through the hearing process and everything that's required, there will be hearings in nearly every place affected in Alaska before the permanent management plans can be instigated. And I don't think the people that drafted this realize the constraints that the federal legislation puts on them. We'd like to have been able to move faster, but there literally is no way to move faster. And to pass an insulting resolution, really, to somebody that doesn't have all that much say. We have 11 members, of which Alaska has a majority, counting its commissioner.
There are two of them. Who is on from Kodiak?
Bart Eaton and Hank Eaton.
Are they native people?
Hank Eaton is vice president of Conan Incorporated. He's native. We were very careful to pick both as advisors and as members the same number of natives as was represented by the general population of the state.
No, Bart Eaton.
Bart Eaton is not native. He was the choice of Senator Stevens and the congressional delegation as representing the big boat fishermen of Kodiak, and fishes out of Unalaska. He'll be able to get to Kodiak.
Okay, what did you say about Truman Emberg?
Truman Emberg was selected as the man who was recommended by the Bristol Bay Native Association. They didn't recommend a native. We have Paul Guy, Phil's brother, is one of our advisors. Henry Wild from the UConn is also an advisor. We're very careful to make sure that those people affected by the fisheries had representation. But again, you are stuck in a straitjacket, and that you are not allowed but 25 members, and you must have the same percentage of membership on your advisory committee from outside of Alaska as they have representation on the public end of the committee. So what we have is 5 members basically from the canned salmon industry and from the processors, not just the canned salmon industry, as the Seattle, Oregon representatives, and then the bulk of our advisors are people that are pretty well known in the fishery, like Truman, that's been with it since year one.
I'd like to ask one more question on this quota of tenor craft in the Bering Sea. Can the American fishermen fish them, and do that count with the quota?
There is no quota under HR 200 for United States nationals as long as any foreigner is allowed to fish. So none of these quotas pertain to United States nationals. The only time we would set, for instance, the secretary has had 1 million metric tons of pollock as his quota. We don't think it should go over 850. Until we have permanent management plans, we can't, that isn't a change that we can do anything but recommend. At such time as the Americans harvested the 850,000 metric ton that we feel is the adequate harvest, then we would tell Americans they had to cut back. But until such time as the Americans have taken all the allowable catch, there is no quota for Americans. So when you speak of quotas, they're only quotas surplus to the needs of the American fleet. But the thing you have to understand that some fishermen have trouble understanding is you can't shut foreign nationals off unless the United States nationals are going to catch it. And the argument that, yes, we can catch it, that's not an argument. It's, will you catch it? And, this is a very controversial issue around, the Kodiak, Aleutian area on tanner craft. I'd say that within 3 years, there'll be no Japanese fishing for tanner craft anyway, as our tanner craft fishery grows.
Is there any questions?
Ed, Dan, there's quite a wide range of representation on advisors to this commission, to this management council. Generally, are these advisors, do they have a progressive attitude towards the whole philosophy of this management council, or they think that they're being sold down the tube?
I don't know that any of the, there's controversy between various districts, but I don't know anybody that thinks he's been sold down the tube.
In other words, they feel like their input is being used in one manner or another.
Yeah. The head of the advisory committee is Jack Kotow from Ketchikan. No. Knute Johnson, who's from Cordova and is on it. We have a fellow from Sandpoint that I don't know well. I guess he's the mayor of, Unalaska. He's the mayor of Unalaska. And he was chosen because he was a fisherman from that area. And he was the one recommended by the fishermen of that area.
What was his name?
Simonson.
Mayor?
Yeah.
He's
the mayor. And we thought that picking an elected official would be the easy way out. He was a fisherman. He owns his own boat. He's not just a deckhand. And he's the elected mayor of one of the biggest ports. I don't know the man, other than I've seen him at 2 meetings now. the thing you got to realize is this took effect on March 1. You know, there isn't any miracles that can solve all the problems just overnight.
You're saying that it's going, progressing probably better than they anticipated at this.
Well, you know, it's a god-awful slow procedure. It's like trying to get a hold of a Corps of Engineers permit to build a dock. You know, it just takes a long time. But it's not that it, in the end, I'm convinced you will see American fishermen fishing the fish. Right now, the Koreans are negotiating in Anchorage with some Kodiak fishermen, which will be part of the Unalaska fleet, to catch Pacific or Alaska pollock on the high seas and deliver them to foreign processing. We have a problem to work out with customs, because when an American goes out there and delivers and then comes back, he's got to clear customs. You know, and that's being worked out now. That's the first step. I'd prefer to see the processing done on shore, but this is the first step that at least Americans are catching them, and the foreigners will wake up to the fact that the Americans don't have a quota. And they do. So if you want to exceed your quota and get more of a share from the Japanese, say the Koreans want to get more of the pollock than the Japanese do, the only way to do it is to then hire American fishermen to catch them, because the Americans don't have a quota, and they can get an increased tonnage. But at the same time, they're cutting their throat, because as they increase the American catch, they decrease everybody else's catch. You know, so I think without a doubt they'll end up eventually fishing it entirely with American nationals. Now that depends on how good we use, say, things like limited entry, or else we're going to be finding that American fleet's level will be coming out of Ballard, Washington.
I
have two more questions, Jim. One is that there was some indication here by Hank that by the foreigners buying into cold storage or processing plants in this country, that this somehow or in this some way would allow the foreign nationals to come within 200 mile limits because of these investments. And we've read that in the paper, then what we are. Of course, Magnuson said something else. What is your opinion?
It's the law of the land says that if that Japanese may buy canneries, they own 98% of Whitney Fidelio. It happens to be the law of the land. We don't have any choice over that at all. But we do have one control, and that's you can't catch fish within the 200 mile limit with foreign nationals to be delivered ashore for processing ashore.
But you're saying there's no relationship between these investments and these foreign fishing vessels?
Absolutely none. In fact, many of the shore investments are direct competitors with the high seas fishermen of their own nation out there. Like anything that's packed by Marabini is in competition with Tayo that has the high seas.
One other question, Jim. Have you felt in any way along in this process that this could be a multinational conspiracy to deprive the Alaskans of their resource through this management council?
I don't see how it could. In the end, what it's going to do is have a multi-million dollar, I might say $1 billion a year operation that is operated by Americans. I have no doubt that the product will be shipped in a great amount to the Orient. But we also have a group that just came over from Denmark that wants in, and they want to compete directly with the Japanese for our herring, because they want to eat them while the Japanese just want to take the egg. So, you know, it will be a multinational operation. But it can't but benefit the United States, because our laws still say that you have to catch them in American-built ships with American crews. And the fact that the company might be owned by Nichiro or Tayo or Marabini doesn't change that. That comes under the Jones Act. You know, people don't like the law of the land, and they argue with us over it. Like, they don't like the idea that we can't just tell the Japanese to get out of Tanner Craft with 105,000 metric tons of allowable catch out there, which we're going to catch about 15,000. Why, how can you tell them to get out?
there any other questions? What's the wishes of the committee?
We've almost lost it. If you're a committee, I think it is sit on for a while.
I think so. Here's the motion, all in favor? Signify by raising your right hand.
Sit. I don't think it takes a motion. I just step it right back in this little folder over here.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Okay, thank you for calling me.
We're going up this, what, Sunday? There's another advisor on.
Yeah, Sunday.
We have one more bill to come up.
Thanks.
Number 12?
That's a separate issue.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Orsini was unable to make the exception, and he asked me if I would come instead. Vicki Cunningham, I have some things to pass out.
Would you state your name for the record?
Vicki Cunningham.
Cunningham?
Yes, sir. C-U-N-N-I-N-G-H-A-M. Basically, Senator Orsini submitted the resolution was submitted completely verbatim by the citizens for the management of Alaska lands. It's pretty self-explanatory. And they had two basic objectives. The first one was to maximize the use of the Alaska D2 lands through multiple use. And their second objective was that they wanted the 80 million acres. And other than that, do you have any questions?
Is there any questions?
Try and address it.
Have confidence.
There was a committee substitute. I don't know if you're Senator Orsini told me about 5 minutes before I came, I was supposed to come, and he said that his was a committee substitute, and so I went down and I got one from documents, and mine didn't have the committee substitute.
I think we did.
Do you have
the?
Yeah. They didn't have the updated one. Okay. But it was pretty much they're still the same as what they wanted.
Did we have this in the House bill?
There was, I think vaguely, I was doing some research on it earlier in this session. I think 14 is what, I'm not real sure about.
Was that Hoggins' bill?
Well.
We already passed?
I don't know. I think Hoggins was opposing the Udall version. This sure doesn't really say that.
That's right.
Well,
it says.
This formally goes in or a federal legislation if those are getting vast American acreage in single purpose use system. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think it's the same language, but I'm not sure.
JR 12 as amended, and here's a little letter to go with it. I think we had this letter about 3 weeks or a month ago, I guess. I have one question, Mr. Chairman. What should we subscribe to $100 corporate membership do, or just the associated membership of $10?
I think the individual. The executive summary that I gave to you is pretty explanatory, sort of is the back of it.
Actually, that didn't come out very well this year.
The lighter sections,
all
the ones that
all look the same to me.
See these barely lighter ones here? That's the.
Oh, God, that's C's. Oh,
mm-hmm.
Nice.
And then the one that. The thing that is all this.
Oh.
Okay. so the main, if you, at least it looks kind of blocky, it's the native land.
I think in effect what this resolution says is that we should move slowly and not lock up land until, you know, until we're sure that the best uses are, have been, you know, explored. And those that we haven't made a decision on, set in the Forest Service or Bureau of Land Management for a later decision.
Well, what it says is public land should be designated, no additional public land should be designated under D2.
No additional.
I think their contention was that 80 million was enough, and the coalition was asked, was proposing.
Which 80 million are they saying is okay?
I'm sorry?
Which 80 million is it they're saying is okay?
Well, they're saying evidently they don't want any more than 80 million, whatever that might be.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. I don't think they even know how much land they want for in each section. I think that's still before Congress at this point. So I don't think they're trying to pinpoint it. Just more or less saying that 80 million is enough.
Do you have any other questions?
I don't see anything offensive about this. Oh, 9-13.
It would read provisions be managed under a flexible system which provides for safe participation in land use decisions.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, that's more or less the same thing, except they're requesting more input from the state.
Looks like a good amendment, Mr. Chairman. I move we adopt it.
Adopt amendment?
Yes.
Did you hear the motion? All in favor? Signify by raising your right hand. Vote. So ordered. Amendment is adopted.
I move we pass it out of committee.
I just have one question on an amendment to a Senate bill like this that's been amended. Do you just
slap amendment?
Handle exactly the same way. It's just that after it's adopted, we have to go back to the Senate for their concurrence.
Right.
It's just handled exactly.
On an amendment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they would have to rewrite it.
Or you make it. We'll adopt this from the House. You know,
you may adopt it.
For
That's the story. Even approaches me.
There is nothing more to come before the committee will be adjourned.